Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Mardell. And it's time for another exciting chapter in Black Bartlemy's Treasure by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 10, How I Swore to the Blood Brotherhood. I remember the moon was very bright, as reaching the end of a grassy lane, or rather a cart track, I saw before me a small, snug-seeming tavern with a board over the door, whereon were the words, "Ye Peck of Malt" by Joel Bim. And looking the place over from trim white steps before the door to trim thatched roof, I marveled at its air of prosperity, for here it stood, so far removed from road and byroad, so apparently away from all habitation, and so lost and hid by trees, it standing within a little copse, that it was great wonder any customer should ever find his way hither. The place was very quiet, not a light showed anywhere, and the door was fast shut, which was nothing strange, for the hour was late. Stepping up to the door, I knocked loudly thereon with my cudgel, at first without effect, but having repeated the summons, a voice from within hailed me gruffly, "Who knocks?" "The faithful friend," says I. At this the door swung suddenly open, and a lanthorn was thrust into my face, whereupon I fell back a step, dazzled. Then gradually, beyond this glare, I made out a dark shape blocking the doorway, a great fellow so prodigiously hairy of head and face that there was little to see of features, save two round eyes and a great hooked nose. "And who do you seek, faithful friend?" says he. "Master Adam Penfeather." "Why then, faithful friend, heave ahead," says he, and making way for me to enter, closed the door, the which I noticed was mighty stout and strong, and having locked and bolted it, barred it with a stout iron set into massy sockets in either wall. "You go mighty secure," says I. "Cock," quoth the giant, eyeing me over slowly, "cock, be ye a cackler? Because if be you do cackle overly, here's we as won't love ye no whit, my cock." "Good," says I, returning his look, "I seek no man's love." "Cock," quoth he, plunging huge fist into his beard and giving it a tug, "I begin to love ye better nor I thought. This way, cock." Herewith he led me along a wide flagged passage and up a broad stair with massy carven handrail. And as I went, I saw the place was much bigger than I had deemed it. The walls, too, were panelled, and I judged it had once formed a part of a noble house. At last we reached a door whereon the fellow knocked softly, and so presently ushered me into a fair chamber, lit by wax candles, and here, seated at the table with papers before him and a pen in his fingers, sat Master Adam Penfeather. "Ah, shipmate," says he, motioning to a chair, "you be something earlier than I expected. Suffer me to make an end of this business. Sit, ye comrade, sit. As for you, bosun, have up a flask of the Spanish wine, the Black Seal." "Aye, captain," says he, and seizing a fistful of hair above his eyebrow, strode away, closing the door behind him. Now, beholding Penfeather as he bent to his writing, the lean, aquiline face of him, so smooth and useful, in contrast to his silver hair, I was struck by his changed look. Indeed, he seemed some bookish student, rather than the lawless rover I had thought him, despite the pistols at his elbow and the long rapier that dangled at his chair back. Moreover, there was about him also an air of latent power that I had not noticed ere this. At length, having made an end of his writing, he got up and stretched himself. "So, shipmate, art ready to swear the blood fellowship with me?" "Aye," says I, "when do we sail?" At this he glanced at me swiftly from the corners of his eyes. "So-ho," he murmured, pinching his chin, "the wind's changed, it seems. You grow eager. And wherefore? 'Tis no matter. Shipmate, says he, shaking his head, and we sail as brothers and comrades. There must never be secret between us. Speak. As you will, quoth I, leaning back in my chair. I learn, then, that you are sailing as master in a ship bound for the main in quest of Sir Richard Brandon, lost off Hispaniola 2 years agone. Sir Richard Brandon is the man I have sought ever since I broke out of the hell he sold me into. Now looky at him, Penfeather, says I, springing to my feet and grasping his arm. Looky now. Put me in the way of meeting this man. Aid me to get my hand on this man, and I am yours. I, body and soul, to the end of things, and this I swear. While I spake thus, my voice hoarse with passion, my fingers clutching his arm, Penfeather stood pinching his chin and watching me beneath his black brows. When I had ended, he turned and falls a-pacing to and fro across the room, as it had been the narrow poop of his ship. Ah, I know you now, my lord, says he, pausing suddenly before me, as the sailor man who watched you as you lay a-groaning in your sleep outside the Conisbee Arms. I guessed you, one of the Conisbee breed, by your ring, and as one born and bred here in Kent, I mind well the adage, to hate like a Brandon and revenge like a Conisbee. And by God, my lord, you are a true Conisbee, it seemeth. Vengeance, says he, his thin features grown sharp and austere. I have seen much and overmuch of it aboard lawless craft and among the wild islands of the Caribbee. I have seen the devilish cruelties of Spaniard, Portugal, and the red horrors of Indian vengeance. But for cold, merciless ferocity, for the vengeance that dieth not, biding its time and battening on poisonous hate, it needeth your man a noble birth, your gentleman a quality. Here he turned his back and paced slowly to the end of the room. When he faced me again, his austere look was gone. In its stead was the grimly whimsical expression of the mariner as I had seen him first. Damn me, says I, scowling, was it to read me homilies that you had me here? Aha, shipmate, says he with rueful smile. There spake the young divine, the excellent divinity student, who committed a peccadillo long years gone, and sailing to the Golden West, gave place to one Adam Penfeather, a sailor man, as you shall hear tell of at St. Kitts, Tortuga, Santa Catalina, a score of places along the main. As to yourself, shipmate, if 'tis only vengeance ye seek, vengeance let it be, though when all's done 'tis but a wind. Hist, here comes the boatswain. Come in, Joe, lad, come in. 'Twas trusty Joel Bim here gave me my first lesson in navigation. Eh, Joe?
Aye, Cap'n, growled the hairy giant. By cock, them was the days, a fair wind, a quick eye, and no favor eye. Them was the days, by a cock's body.
So saying, he placed a flask of wine on the table, together with a curious silver cup, and at a sign from Penfeather, left us together. And now, comrade, says Penfeather, filling the goblet, draw up your chair and do as I do. And now, as we sat facing each other across the table, Penfeather turns his left sleeve back and, whipping out a knife, nicked himself therewith on the wrist and squeezed thence a few drops of blood into the wine, which done, he passed the knife to me, and I, though misliking the extravagance of the thing, nevertheless did the same. Martin, says he, give me your hand, so, now, swear as I do. And thus, clasping each other's hands, we swore the oath of the brotherhood, and this as followeth: to keep ever each other's counsel, to aid each other in all things against all men soever, to cherish and comfort each other in every adversity, to be faithful each to each unto the death. Thereafter, at his command, I drank of the wine wherein our blood was mingled, and he did the like. And now, says he, leaning back in his chair and viewing me with his pensive smile, since we be brothers and comrades sworn, how do you like me now?
"Better than I did," says I, speaking on impulse. "For sure you are the strangest picaroon that ever cheated the gallows."
"Hmm," says he, pinching his chin. "And I am neither hanged nor murdered. You shall one day find me a worshipful magistrate, Martin, justice of the peace and quorum, custos rotulorum, and the rest on it. There my ambition lies. As for you, Martin, Lord Wendover, there's your enemy, ha? Huh? Bloody vengeance and murder and what beside?"
"That is mine own concern," I retorted angrily. "And look ye, since comrades we are, you will forget who and what I am."
"Why, so I have, Martin, so I have. Art a poor destitute rogue that might be a man and rich, but for this vengeful maggot o' the brain. Howbeit, thou art my comrade sworn and brother in arms, and as such I shall trust thee to the death, Martin. And shall find me worthy, Adam, despite thy cursed tongue. Death is an ill thing, Martin."
"Is it?" says I, and laughed.
"Aye," he nodded, "an ill thing to him that hath ambitions above the brute. See here." Unbuttoning his doublet, he showed me a shirt of fine chain mail beneath his linen. "'Twill turn any point ever forged and stop a bullet handsomely, as I do know."
"Why, sure," says I, a little scornful, "you avowed yourself a cautious man."
"True, Martin, and I have another shirt the like of this for you. And as for caution, I have need, do you see, comrade? The arrow that flieth by day is an ill enough thing, but the knife that stabbeth by the dark is worse. This shirt hath turned death thrice already, once by the breast here, and twice twixt the shoulders. I am a man marked for death, Martin. Murder creepeth at my heels. It hath dogged me over seas and found me here in Kent at last, it seems. And, comrade, henceforth the steel that smiteth me shall smite you also, belike."
"And why is your life stopped thus?"
"By reason of a secret I bear about me, wherefore, saving only my good friend Nicholas Frant, who perished, I have ever been a solitary man, walking alone and distrustful of my fellows. For Martin, I have here the secret of a treasure that hath been the dream and hope of roving adventurers along the main this many a year. A treasure beyond price. Men have sought it vainly, have striven and fought, suffered and died for it, have endured plague, battle, shipwreck, famine, have died screaming neath Indian tortures, languished in Spanish dungeon and slave ship, and all for sake of Bartlemy's treasure, and of all that ever sought it. But one man hath ever seen this treasure, and I am that man, Martin. And this treasure is so marvelous well hid that without me it shall lie unfounded till the trump of doom. But now, since we are brethren and comrades, needs must I share with thee the treasure and the secret of it."
"No, no, Adam," says I, "keep it to yourself, I'll none of it."
"Share and share," says he, "'tis the law of the coast. Nonetheless, I want naught of it." "'Tis the law," he repeated, "and moreover, with such vast wealth, a man shall buy anything in this world, even vengeance, Martin. Looky now, here is the secret of our treasure." Hereupon he thrust his hand into his breast and drew out a small oilskin packet or bag, suspended about his lean throat by a thin steel chain, and from this he drew forth a small roll of parchment. "Here 'tis, Martin," says he softly. "Here's that so many lusty men have perished for. Not much to look at, shipmate, torn, do you see, and stained. But here's wealth, Martin, fame, honors all the vices and all the evils, and chief among 'em, vengeance." So saying, he unrolled the small scrap of parchment, and holding it before me, I saw it was a rough chart. "Take it, Martin, and study it the while I tell you my story.
Join me here next week
for the next chapter of Black Bartlemy's Treasure on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.